You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and it's Friday. And so our first hour of our program on Friday, always time for Senator Bernie Sanders for our national town hall meeting, Brunch with Bernie. Senator Sanders, greetings. Senator Sanders, we just lost him. The sound just went.
Okay, guys, we lost the sound.
Oh, now we have you, Senator.
All right, we're back in.
Great, we're back in business.
Okay.
So I've been quoting you all week long. You've keep popping up in the news. You want to give us your take on how the week is going and what you think is important?
Well, it has been a busy week. And one of the issues that we focused on, there was a very modest bill dealing with child care on the floor of the Senate, which passed. And I took advantage of that opportunity to get an amendment in, a small amendment, which begins to raise issues, Tom, about an issue we don't talk about enough in this country, and that is childhood poverty, which in the United States is higher at about 22% than any other major country on earth. And to my mind, when you look at the issue of childhood poverty, it is not just a moral issue, because you're dealing with the most vulnerable human beings in the world. These are the little kids. These are the people who are 2 months old and 3 years old and 5 years old. And it just seems to me that from a morality perspective, we just can't turn our backs on kids. We just can't do it. And when we have almost over one out of five kids in this country living in poverty, some of them not getting the nutrition they need, some of them living in totally inadequate housing, some of them, most of them not getting the education and the early childhood education they need, from a moral perspective, that is not the kind of people we should be. But then if you look at it beyond that, just even from a dollars and cents point of view, if you don't invest in your kids, and if you have 25-30% of your kids dropping out of high school, if many of these kids do not get jobs and become taxpayers, if a decent number of them end up in jail at $50,000, $60,000 a shot, it just makes no sense at all when we need a strong, well-educated, productive workforce to compete in the global economy. So we have got to focus attention on the needs of our children. We need to make sure that childcare, good quality childcare and early childhood education is available to every working family in this country. I mean, one of the terribly serious problems that gets almost no discussion is that in my state of Vermont and all over this country, if you're a working class family and a mom and dad go out to work, it is very difficult to find affordable childcare. Childcare is, the good quality childcare is very expensive. There are long waiting lines all over this country. And what we have got to recognize is that in the year 2014, you know, when mom and dad are both working, we have got to understand that education does not begin at age five. It begins a lot younger than that. So that's an issue that we are working hard on. The president this week, at an event in the White House that I could not attend, I was, had to be in the Capitol, announced his effort to take steps regarding improving the Fair Labor Standards Act. Not a sexy issue, but a very important issue. Right now, Tom, you have workers in this country making $25,000 a year supervising, quote-unquote, spending 5% of their time supervising a few workers, and they're working 50 or 60 hours a week. Under current regulations, those workers are not entitled to overtime pay. So you can be working 50, 60 hours a week. You get straight pay. You don't get time and a half. That's wrong. The president wants to look at that. My view is that that number should go, instead of being $455 right now, should go up to about $1,000. So if people are making less than $1,000 a year, they should be eligible for time and a half. A couple of days ago, Tom, we had a on another issue. I am chairman of the subcommittee that deals with primary health care. And we held a hearing to ask the following question. And the question was, what can the United States learn in terms of providing universal health care and cost-effective quality care to our people from other countries around the world. And we had some excellent panelists who joined us from Canada, from Taiwan, somebody who was an expert on the French healthcare system, and somebody who was from Denmark talking about the Danish healthcare system. And my Republican colleagues had, you know, a couple of folks who were not sympathetic to any government involvement in healthcare at all. So it was an interesting discussion. We had a young physician named Danielle Martin from Toronto, who I thought did very, very well in taking on some of my Republican colleagues and in defending universal health care in Canada. And that the exchange, the video has gone more or less viral. I think it's over 200,000 now. People can find that video on my website, sanders.senate.gov. It's worth watching to see what happens when conservative Republicans are confronted with the reality of a strong, universal, cost-effective healthcare system as exists in Canada. I think a lot of people are concerned about what was going on with the CIA and Senator Feinstein's speech. As you have heard from me for years now, in my view, the intelligence agencies of this country, the NSA, CIA, are out of control. We certainly need to know about the torture practiced under the Bush administration. And the CIA has got to understand that they work for the American people and for the United States Congress. They are not an independent entity that can do whatever they want to do. On Monday of last week, some of us did what's called an all-nighter. People were on the floor all night talking about the planetary crisis of climate change. And I think the point was made very effectively over and over again to highlight this issue. We just cannot push it under the rug, that there is no debate on the issue of climate change in terms of the scientific community. Well over 95% of peer-reviewed articles that discuss climate change acknowledge that climate change is real. It is caused by man-made activities, and it is already causing severe damage on the planet, and that damage and destruction will only get worse in years to come if we don't cut back on greenhouse gas emissions. So I applaud Senator Barbara Boxer, Senator Sheldon Feingold, Senator Brian Schatz, and others who organized the event. I participated in it. I thought it was an important exercise.
That's a lot that's been going on. We still have a minute left in this segment.
Well, so now you want to know more, I'll tell you some more.
Okay.
If that's not enough for you, we are dealing, I and some other senators, Elizabeth Warren, John Tester, met with all of the postal unions in our effort to make sure that we create a situation by which there are not continued cuts in postal in the postal system. In recent years, the postal system has seen an uptick, an increase in their revenue. They're doing better, and we want to give them the tools to do extremely well. And we do not want to see, when unemployment is so high right now, massive cuts in the postal system in terms of jobs lost and the speed of mail delivery cut back. So paying attention to the Postal Service and making sure that we protect those jobs and the Postal Service is also a very large issue for us.
Yeah, I know you've been a real champion of that legislation. Senator Bernie Sanders here with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Sanders will be taking your call right after this. Be sure to check out his website at sanders.senate.gov. It's 15 minutes past here. We'll be back with Bernie.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Brunch with Bernie. Check out his website, sanders.senate.gov. And that video of the Canadian healthcare expert is really worth watching. And welcome back, Paul, in South Lyon, Michigan. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Yeah, good day, gentlemen. Thanks for all your hard work, Senator, including staying up all night. 3 weeks ago today, you and I discussed on this show the Koch brothers and other selfish billionaires owning and controlling the Republican Party. 5 days later, Harry Reid, thankfully and correctly, started talking about it. Coincidence? I don't know. My point is there will be zero progress made on any issue until the American people wake up and vote out all of the do-nothing Republicans. Virtually all Republicans agree on major issues. They're all against raising the minimum wage, paying veterans benefits, unemployment insurance, food stamps. They're all against a woman's right to choose and raising taxes on billionaires. Isn't that true, Senator, that they're all virtually
Paul, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And by the way, what Paul is mentioning is, I don't know if it was last week or early this week, the majority leader, Harry Reid, went on the floor, and he gave a brilliant speech talking about the Koch brothers. And by the way, if you go to my website, you'll find that speech as well. We sent it out to a large audience because I thought it was such a good speech. But I want to take a minute to deal with Paul's question because it is enormously important. The way the Republicans gain influence and win elections is simply because many, many Americans do not understand what they stand for and how right-wing extremists they are. This is not the Republican Party of Dwight D. Eisenhower. It is not the Republican Party of Richard Nixon in terms of policy, not the Republican Party even of Ronald Reagan. This is now a party, as Paul indicated, heavily controlled by right-wing extremist billionaires like the Koch brothers. And let me just tick off what these people believe in. These people believe that retirement security, Social Security, should not be done by the federal government. They want to privatize it or at the least make massive cuts in Social Security. They do not want the federal government involved in Medicare. They think we should privatize Medicare or at the very least make major cuts in Medicare, make major cuts in Medicaid. These people, and in particular, the Koch brothers, who have made most of their money in fossil fuels, they want to abolish agencies like the Environmental Protection Agency so they can pollute as much as they can with impunity. These guys do not only do they not want to raise the minimum wage, which is now an abysmally low 7.25 an hour. We want to raise it to 10.10 an hour. They want to abolish the concept of the minimum wage. In other words, if in high unemployment areas, desperate people are forced to work for $3 or $4 an hour, for them that is freedom. Their understanding of freedom is that you abolish every major piece of legislation passed in the last 80 years which protect working families and the middle class, which protect the elderly, the children, the sick, or the poor. That is their understanding of freedom. So if you are 70 years of age and you're diagnosed with cancer and you have no money and you have no health insurance, hey, you are free. You don't have Medicare. You don't have Social Security. You're a free person, free to die. And that is how they look at the world and what their ideology is.
Senator Bernie Sanders with us live from Capitol Hill. We'll be back with more of Senator Sanders right after this. More of your questions, your calls for Senator Sanders. Past the hour, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Program. It's our brunch with Bernie, our Senator Bernie Sanders, taking your calls in our national town hall meeting, Ashes in Chicago, Illinois, listening to WCPT. You are on the air with Senator Sanders.
Well, hello, Senator Sanders. My question is, do you think the size and population of the U.S. is a disadvantage for the U.S. in terms of trade agreements because other countries are smaller in size, smaller populations? So their companies can sell their products in our country to more people, and our products can't be won't be sold to as many people in the other foreign countries.
Ashes, no, I don't see it that way, to be honest with you. The way I see our trade policies, and this goes back to NAFTA and CAFTA and permanent normal trade relations with China, what it's important to understand. And by the way, it takes us to Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement, which, you know, we're looking at right now. All of these trade agreements are heavily, heavily pushed and supported by Wall Street and the major corporations in this country. And the bottom line there are a lot of aspects to a trade agreement, but the most important, I think, is they want the opportunity to be able to shut down their plants in the United States, not pay workers 10, 15, 20 bucks an hour, but move to Vietnam, move to China, where people are working for much, much lower wages. And then when they get to those countries, they can sell their products back into the United States. And it is not just blue-collar jobs. Increasingly, it is white-collar jobs as well, information-type jobs that can be done abroad. I mean, I think everybody has had the experience of dealing with perhaps an airline or some large company where you're talking to somebody who is from the Philippines or someplace else making pennies an hour. So I am very proud that recently the majority leader, Harry Reid, said, you know what? The Trans-Pacific Partnership Bill, supported by all of the major corporations, is not coming to the floor of the Senate. That's where he is right now, and I support that decision. These trade agreements have benefited the large corporations. They have been a real, they have hurt just millions and millions of working people in terms of job loss and an economic race to the bottom.
Ron, in Lubbock, Maine. Do I have that right, Ron?
That's correct.
You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Senator, legislators often claim success preventing cuts to Medicare, but in effect, it's cut all the time. The annual deductible started a few years ago. Copay has risen dramatically and so forth. Your comments, please. Thank you.
You're right, Ron. What can I tell you? You are right. I mean, what we're trying to do is fend off significantly worse cuts. As I think most listeners know, many Republicans want to end Medicare as it is currently structured and convert it into a voucher program where seniors are given $7,000 a year and asked to go out and get private insurance, which is just a horrendous idea. There are other people who want to raise the eligibility level for seniors from 65 to 70, a terrible idea. There are others who want to make varying different types of cuts. My own view, Ron, is that the Medicare program has basically worked well. We need to strengthen it, not cut it. And in fact, what I believe is as a nation, we need a Medicare for All program. Right now, we have Medicare starts at age 65. What I think we need is to take the concept of Medicare, which is, by and large, a single-payer healthcare system, expand it to our entire population. And when you do that, you will provide healthcare to every man, woman, and child, and you'll do it in a much more cost-effective way than we currently do.
Pat, in Star Prairie, Wisconsin, you're on the air with Senator Sanders, and thanks for listening to KTNF.
Thanks, Tom. Senator Sanders and Tom Hartman, both of you are too young to remember Charles Carroll of CBS News, but my parents ran his favorite restaurant in Wisconsin. And I've been working in this industry all my life. As I grew up in the business, I'm 67 years old. I probably got 61 or 62 years in the industry. And I've never been ashamed of an industry that I've worked in all my life. I'm a hotel restaurant consultant today. And yesterday, when you were on the Ed Schultz show yesterday, Senator, you had mentioned the abuse, and you referred to McDonald's and Burger King. Let me tell you where the real abuse is on this manager's salary. It's in the tipped employees, and especially like states in Wisconsin. I live right on the Minnesota-Wisconsin border. Wisconsin with no tip credit, the wage. You mentioned before they want to. There's those that want to abolish the concept of a minimum wage. Well, let me tell you, the restaurant industry has, the powerful National Restaurant Association has abolished, because minimum wage for tipped employees hasn't gone up for nearly 40 years, because every time they raise the minimum wage, of course, they just increase the tip credit. Right across the border in Minnesota, you got Minnesota, which is raising its minimum wage to 10 to 10, 15 an hour with no tip credit. You can see the difference between $2.31 an hour and $10 an hour. A man or an employee can make about $4,000 to $5,000 at minimum more in Minnesota. And
Pat, we just have a minute left.
Right. All right, Pat, let me just pick up. Pat, thank you very much for raising that issue. So that everybody is clear what Pat is talking about. Within the concept of minimum wage today, you have another level which says that if you earn tips, you only get a small percentage of the minimum wage. So you have workers today whose minimum wage may be, I don't know exactly, $2-3 an hour, and the rest have got to come from tips. Well, you know what? There are some places and some times where you're not making good tips. So Pat's point is that there are people today on a given day who may end up making $4 an hour or $5 an hour. The bill that we're looking at, by the way, Pat, substantially raises the minimum wage for tipped employees.
That's great. It is 28 minutes past the hour. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour here on the Tom Hartman Program. We'll be back with more of your questions for Senator Sanders in our national town hall meeting right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. You can sign up for the Bernie Buzz there, his regular newsletter. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, live from the Senate Recording Studios. Hi, Torgan, over there on Capitol Hill. And Larry in Tucson, Arizona, you're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you, Senator Sanders, both for what you're doing. My question is, you've already addressed children in poverty, climate change, employment, and I'm wondering if the government may have the wherewithal and maybe inside the Veterans Affairs to start a WPA type thing where the government supports organic farming, indoor and outdoor farming, and trains people to be good organic farmers, guarantees food quality and food supply. With the weather changes coming, we could be devastated by a storm across the Midwest at the right time, or Texas or Oklahoma or beef or chicken supply, anything. But why won't the government, or can the government, start like a WPA that would employ somebody like me, a 59-year-old semi-disabled veteran who nobody in Tucson wants to give a job, and other people who may have PTSD and other challenges? They work well in gardens with a little help. So I wonder if healthy organic food isn't the solution to healthy children and healthy elderly and healthy veterans who are trying to rehabilitate and anybody in poverty. And once everybody's well-fed, maybe they'll think about whether they need a job at Exxon or Texaco.
Larry, we got it. Thank you. Let's let Bernie answer.
Well, Larry raises a number of important issues. There is no question that there is far more consciousness about food quality today than we have ever seen before, I think, in this country, or at least for many, many years. There is no question that there is a great worry about childhood obesity, where we, by the way, as a result of a number of programs, may be turning the page a little bit and addressing that very, very serious issue. People, I think, increasingly want to know that the food that they're eating, that they are eating and that they're giving to their kids is healthy food. And there has been a huge increase in the organic food industry. I could tell you in Vermont, I think 20% of our dairy farmers now do it organically. We have hundreds and hundreds of organic vegetable farmers in the state, and that number is growing, and I think that's true all over the country. I could also pick up on Larry's point when he says that for PTSD, we know there are a number of programs out there, Larry, where veterans dealing with PTSD are doing well by working in agriculture. So I think, you know, your point has merit. We want to grow organic food. We want to put veterans to work, doing work that will help them address their problems. So I think it's a good idea.
Linda in Buckley, Washington, listening on KBCS. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. My question has to do with how credit reports are used to determine employment and car insurance rates, none of which has anything to do with the ability of somebody to drive a car or their skills and qualifications for a job. And I was wondering if there's anything being done to change how credit reports are used.
Linda, that's a question I think that many people share. They share that concern. You know, one of the explosions that we have seen in recent years in terms of technology is that everybody knows everything about you. And, you know, sometimes people are late for whatever reason, inadvertently, or they don't have the money and they don't pay a bill, and their credit rating gets impacted, and then they can't get a job. And what Linda is asking, what does that have to do with your ability to get a job? Because you didn't have any money 3 years before. I think she's right, and I think you are seeing. I can't tell you that legislation is going to be passed tomorrow to address it, Linda, but those are exactly the kinds of concerns that a whole lot of people have in terms of how technology is being used in a counterproductive way.
Danny in Dubuque, Iowa. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for the great show that you do every day. To the future president of the United States, Senator Sanders, I want to thank you for your service to the country also.
Go.
I want to know what you think about charter schools and how they are going to be taken away from the regular child that needs to be schooled. Or, you know, I mean...
Danny, I missed the first part of your question. I'm sorry. What do I think about what?
The charter
schools. Oh, charter schools. Okay, good. Okay.
I mean, I myself was actually brought up in one, but it was a Catholic school. So my folks, when they paid for my education, they were double dipping. They were paying for the Catholic upbringing, and they were paying for the public schools, the parochial. My mom always said that if she had it to do over again, she would have did everything but through the public schools, just because there's a better pool of money to educate people with.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously, you know, we have a history in this country where most people, especially people who don't have a lot of money, get their education through public schools. I certainly did, and most Americans do. And the goal there is to create the best schools that we possibly can have in a very competitive global economy. And in some areas, we're making some really good progress. Some parts of the country, we're not doing so well. What I would add to that, as I said earlier in the program, we have to understand.
Yep, Senators, we just lost the Senator's audio. He's gone. Can you try plugging it into a different pot? Senator, hang on just a minute. We're going to we think we may have a technical problem here in the studio, and Shane is going to try plugging in a different port and a different audio line. When we came in this morning, the studio had been filled with steam. And you're not getting any audio? Okay, hang on just a minute. We're going to check the ISDN line. Is the ISDN line bouncing? Is it? Yeah, okay. It's apparently on your end. We're not getting any audio down the ISDN line. You can't... He's still responding to the last question. Okay. All right. So, apparently we have from the Senate recording studio has the audio to us has dropped. Maybe dropping the ISDN line and reconnecting? I don't know. Yeah. Okay. They're going to call us right back. In the meantime, I will take a call. And Wayne in Chicago, while we're reconnecting with Senator Sanders, I'm going to do it. Anything goes Friday here. Wayne, you had a question.
Yes, Tom. What I wanted to ask Senator Sanders was, the executive branch is not doing its job as far as the safeguards that need to be put in place for not just the CIA, NSA, FBI, but all the other intelligence organizations that are not so well known. So what I wanted to ask him was, like, if they don't start doing their job and safeguarding the privacy of the American people, what do you think it's going to be like 5-10 years from now? Because they're tapping into anybody they feel like tapping into anytime they feel like tapping into.
Okay, I think the senator has reconnected with us, Wayne. Senator, can you hear me?
Hear me? I can hear you.
Yeah, we hear you fine now. We apparently.
I heard Wayne's question. I was able to hear
the
question.
Okay, go for it.
Well, Wayne, you're raising, you know, just another issue of enormous consequences. You know, one of the things I love about the show, Tom, is that, you know, people have...
Oh, we just lost your audio again. Yeah. Try it. Try potting the Skype up. Try it anyway. Oh, it's dead. Can you put the Skype on a different pot and take Skype audio while they're reconnecting? We're going to try and get some audio here for the senator. I'm very sorry for this. Yeah. Okay. Hang on just a second. Here's Senator Sanders. He's going to hear himself.
What freedom is about. You know, we need to take a deep breath and talk about freedom. You know, a lot of my colleagues, you know, talk about freedom, great free society. Well, you know what? If somebody knows everything about you, and it's not just government, you got private sector companies out there who, you know, can patch together your life, know your medical records, know your banking records. That is not a free society. And as a result of the huge advances of technology, there are powerful folks in government and in the private sector who just know so much about us. And this is an issue that we have got to address. Intelligence to help us fight terrorism, absolutely. But intelligence which is prying into the lives of tens and tens of millions of people, 99.999 having nothing to do with terrorism, is a real threat to what America is supposed to be about.
Okay, great. We'll be right back. We're going to try and fix for once the audio problems. Thank you, Senator. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
It's Brunch with Bernie with Senator Bernie Sanders. We'll be back in 4 minutes after a short commercial break. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Let's try this again. Senator, can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, this is like one of those bad cell phone ads. Very glad. Did you want to restate or wrap up any of your previous comments that might have gotten dropped when the audio crashed?
No, I think we got it. Wayne raised a very legitimate concern about the overreach of security and intelligence agencies in the United States spying on the American people, and he is absolutely right. Combating terrorism is important, but we don't have to go after the 99.999% of our people who have nothing to do with terrorism.
Okay. Nicole in Arcadia, California. Thanks for calling. You're on the air with Senator Sanders.
Hi, Tom and Senator Sanders.
Hi, Nicole.
Hello. I'm calling because the USDA is set to allow U.S. chicken to be shipped to China for processing and then shipped back here for consumption, which they already do for fish. But aside from the lower cleanliness standards and the fact that the USDA is not going to have an inspection office over there, it just goes to show another loss of American well-paying jobs. And it's also a huge waste of fuel. And it's also not going to have any labeling requirements such as chicken or on the chicken, like GMOs don't have to be labeled. I'm just wondering if there's anything that we can do about that. And also, if you run in 2016, you surely have my vote.
Thank you very much. Nicole, you know, you touch again on a number of important issues. Hard for me to imagine why we should be sending chickens to China to get them processed to send back into the United States. Why is that? And the answer is that labor in China is significantly cheaper. The answer is that environmental standards in China are significantly weaker. The answer is that regulations and safety inspections in China are not as strong as they are in the United States. And that is just unacceptable. It really, really is. And it is not only a job issue, and it is a job issue, but it is a food quality issue. People want to know that the quality of their food is good, that the processing is done in a safe way, in a clean way, and that work should be done in the United States of America. And what I will say, Nicole, I think you are seeing more and more attention being paid today to the need to have products made and processed here in the United States of America. Every poll that I have seen tells me that that is at the very top of people's list. A few years ago, I got involved with the Smithsonian Institute, Smithsonian Museums, when I noticed that many of the products that they were selling were made from all over the world, and not significantly here in the United States. They have, to a significant degree, changed that. But we have got to do more, and we have got to put pressure on manufacturers to say, we want jobs here in the United States. Do your work here in the United States. I think that's what the American people want.
Mark Taylor Canfield, a reporter in Seattle, Washington, has a question for you, Senator.
Hi, Tom. Senator Sanders, it's a pleasure speaking with you, sir. I remember when you visited Seattle a few years ago to talk about the issues of rent control and affordable housing on behalf of our city council member, Judy Nicastro. But today I called about the Time Warner Comcast merger. We have a new group in Seattle called Progressive Radio Northwest, trying to bring back some of the progressive voices to the airways in Seattle and Portland, and we're having a big panel forum discussion here on March 26th, and I'll be one of the panelists. And one of the main issues that I've been reporting on as a journalist is the fact that the United States has dropped to number 46 on the Reporters Without Borders World Press Index, something that I cannot be proud of as a journalist. And this new Time Warner Comcast merger has brought up the whole issue of corporate media consolidation again. I wanted to tell you that I testified before the FCC at the last round of hearings on media ownership, and I had in my hand two reports that were commissioned by the FCC, done by Professors Yan, Napoli, and Yanich from the Universities of Michigan and Delaware. And these reports showed some of the negative effects on corporate media consolidation. If they hadn't been
Mark, I can't have you giving a speech. We've only got 3 minutes left. I'd like to get.
I think I got Mark's point, and everything that Mark said is right. You know, Tom, you and I have discussed many times the degree to which, in a nation politically divided, the degree to which right-wing talk show hosts, and in some cases real right-wing extremists, dominate the area, dominate media markets all over this country. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, but my guess is about 95% of talk radio is right-wing?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. You know, and that's absurd. And now what we're looking at is a merger between, you know, with Time Warner becoming even bigger, which will give enormous power to this very large corporation. By the way, not only in terms of media per se and cable, but also in terms of the Internet. So you're going to end up with a company that has huge influence over Internet access, not to mention cable. That is a very, very bad idea. And this whole fight for a media in this country, which is not controlled by a handful of major corporations, is one of the most important issues that we can focus on.
Senator, we have about 35 seconds left. You want to wrap up the week?
Yeah, let me wrap up and just, you know, mentioned something that I think is just of enormous consequence. And that, Tom, is if we don't get our act together, this nation will find itself solidly as an oligarchic form of society where a handful of multinational corporations and billionaires controlling not only the economic life of the nation, but the political life as well. As a result of this disastrous Citizens United Supreme Court decision, people like the Koch brothers are now able to spend hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars electing the candidates of their choice. That is the struggle that we have got to engage in, and we've got to win that struggle.
Senator, thanks so much for being with us again this week.
Thank you.
It is always great having you on. Be sure to check out Bernie's website, sanders.senate.gov. And we will be back with Anything Goes Friday. Right after this, you're on the Tom Harbin.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show. So please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And you may not have heard about it, you may not know about it, but tomorrow, the 15th of March, if I have this right, is the White Man March. Seriously, whitemanmarch.com is the website. Kyle Hunt is a spokesperson for it. And so let's engage in a little bit of anthropology here and find out what this is all about. Kyle, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Why, first of all, where is the march and when? All that kind of thing.
The march is all around the world. It's a viral idea, and it's not necessarily a literal march. People are just being asked to go out and do something that is pro-white. This could include holding up signs, passing out literature, or engaging in some other kinds of public demonstrations.
Burning a cross?
No, I don't know why that would be necessary or, good publicity.
Well, usually when I think of people who are, you know, promoting white men, I think of the KKK.
Isn't that interesting? Because you talk about white privilege a lot, and we don't actually have anybody out there that's pro-white in our media. And in fact, our media,
except all those white people,
is completely anti-white. Well, it's got a lot of Jewish people. But let me tell you about.
That was a question I have for you, Kyle. I'm on your website. I keep seeing this reference to Jews throughout your website. Are Jews not white people in your mind?
No, and in Jewish minds, white people are not related to them either.
They don't consider white people
Jews, and Jews should not consider Jews white people. Jews, in fact, have been the leading proponents behind the civil rights movement. In fact, the NAACP was led by Jews for much of its existence, and they have been working to undermine white Western civilization in many different ways. A quote by Barbara Lerner Specter is a very ominous one for white people, in which she says that multiculturalism is now coming to Europe, and Jews will be blamed for it because they're playing a leading role. They've done the same thing in the United States as well. They are not white. In fact, they are often anti-white.
Okay. So I'm curious, Kyle, when did you realize that as a white guy, you were oppressed?
Well, let me tell you about affirmative action, in which white people, and there are a lot of poor white people. Have you ever been to Appalachia?
I have.
White people are being oppressed in that they are victims of racism and discrimination. They're targeted and not allowed to have certain jobs and are not allowed to basically get into the same kinds of educational institutions as people who are less qualified than them are. And it's based solely on the color of the skin. the fact that they are white hinders them from getting the same kinds of opportunities
anyone
else, including illegal immigrants often, are able to get.
Okay, I'd still like to get back to the question, if you don't mind, and I don't mean this, I genuinely am not going to pick on you or ridicule you or anything like that. I was just curious if you could share with us, you know, your personal story of what was the epiphany for you that caused you to realize that you or that white people like you are oppressed.
Are in danger?
Yeah.
Okay, well, how about when Jamie Foxx is on Saturday Night Live and he says, "I kill all the white people in the movie." How great is that? And then
in Django.
The audience applauds. Yeah, he's promoting Django Unchained. Let's talk about another movie that recently came out, 12 Years a Slave. They're continuously bringing up this idea that every white person today needs to be collectively punished for the sins of slavery. Now, at the height of slavery, only 1.4% of all American whites actually owned slaves. And there were, in fact, many Jews, blacks, and American Indians who also owned slaves, but you're never going to see this represented in the movies or in the textbooks. And I don't know if you know this history, but there were a lot of white slaves in the colonies as well, right up until mainly white people fought to end the practice of slavery. But we don't get a whole lot of credit. They don't make inspirational stories about all the white people who fought to end the...
Are you talking about the people who came over from Europe on indentures, lifetime indentures, who were functional slaves?
There were not only indentured servants, and oftentimes those indentured servants were treated worse than the black slaves. But there were 300,000 Irish slaves alone who were brought to the colonies. And this is never discussed. I'm part Irish myself, and I think it's a tragedy that
the Irish slaves were able to blend in, assuming that your statement is accurate. I can't verify that, but I do know that there were people of all colors, including white people, who were essentially slaves, and in some cases overtly slaves.
But
within a generation, or if they could get away, they could blend into the uber culture, into the larger, you know, culture, and nobody would question them, whereas somebody with black skin couldn't do that.
Let's talk about the slaves in Europe. About 1.5 million slaves were kidnapped and taken as slaves in bondage by the North Africans, the Barbary Pirates. I'm not sure if you know about that history. It was going on around the same time as African slave trade. And
to this moment right now, Kyle, when did you realize that you were oppressed? What has motivated you to participate in this?
Because my people are being denigrated at every possible turn. The white man is being displaced, ridiculed, and...
How has this affected you in your life?
Well, because I'm not allowed to even express my love of my race, a pride in our accomplishments. Can you imagine?
You're on the air right now talking to 3 million people. I mean, I'm not stopping you.
Well, as soon as somebody does express a pride in their race, if they're white, and only if they're white, then they're called a racist, a Nazi, a bigot, a white supremacist. Any Klansman, as you've insinuated.
Well, don't you think that you are a white supremacist?
No. What have I said that has indicated that I consider white people to be able to lord supreme over everybody else?
Okay, so you don't think that other races are inferior to whites?
I love my race, and I'm willing to discuss our accomplishments and some of our downfalls and some of the sore points of our history that often go
if you don't mind, Kyle, I'm just again, what, you know, I get it that, you know, some white guy in a community that has a lot of people of color in it who didn't get a job might think that he was racially discriminated against, or might even have been racially discriminated against, and would go off on it. What happened to you? What brought you into this?
I saw that there is a genocide taking place, Tom. You can look at the UN's definition of genocide, which is first killing members of the group, or in whole or in part, two, causing a serious bodily harm or mental harm.
So white people are being killed.
Three, deliberately inflicting on the group conditions of life calculated to bring about its physical destruction in whole or in part. Any of these conditions, if they're met, it constitutes.
So how are white people being killed
genocide.
In a way that is genocide?
That does not need to even be the case. But I'll tell you what, Tom, white people are the victims of black-on-white crime at 39 times the rate of white-on-black crime. There's a serious epidemic going on in which white people are being targeted.
So you're
white-on-whites through
so
the
you're afraid of black people?
I'm not afraid of black people. I'm talking about federal crime statistics, which indicate that there is a serious problem going on. Have you not seen this knockout game where white people are being targeted?
Yeah, that Fox News started and has been promoting.
It's never called a hate crime. It's never called a hate crime because I'll tell you what, we don't have civil rights. White people don't have civil rights. And I'll give you a quote for this. This is from Mary Frances Berry, former chairwoman of the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights. She said, civil rights laws were not passed to protect the rights of white men and do not apply to them. This is a civil rights struggle, Tom.
Okay. I find the whole thing fascinating. Kyle Hunt, his website is whitemanmarch.com. Kyle, thanks for dropping by today.
Thank you, Tom.
Curious your thoughts on Kyle's thoughts right after this.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
That was interesting. I'm still trying to wrap my head around the cultural anthropology of this. What causes white people to think like this? And welcome back, Mary in Chestertown, Maryland. Hey, Mary, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. It's Anything Goes Friday. What's on your mind?
Well, first, I'd like to comment on what the gentleman just said. He's right. The people in Appalachia are being oppressed, but they're not being oppressed by black people. They're being oppressed by rich white people.
I noticed.
But I want to say, what happened to boycott? There was a time back in the day when people would boycott companies and corporations and didn't buy the things that they sell. What happened to that?
I think the only
thing.
Yeah, I've been around for a while and been noticing this, and it's in my lifetime, and I don't know how old you are, Mary, but I'm 62, and in my lifetime, the only boycott that I've seen that I think was genuinely successful was Cesar Chavez's grape boycott in California, and that actually wasn't even economically impact the grape producers. It just morally shamed them to the point that they said, we want to stop the awful publicity. We will let you create a union. In fact, I guess that there's a movie. I don't know if it's a TV movie or a movie coming out about the life of Cesar Chavez fairly soon. But I don't know of any boycotts other than that, or maybe the boycott of the divestiture movement of South Africa. But that was not a consumer boycott in the United States because there were not South African goods for sale in the United States. That was mostly people, you know, leaning principally on universities to sell stock in companies that did business in South Africa. Other than that, do you know of any boycotts in the last 40 years that have been successful?
Well, I remember when we used to boycott everything. You know, if there was a company that was behaving badly, or maybe it was just in the black communities that we did this, companies that were behaving badly, we just stopped buying their products.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something the American people ought to start doing.
Yeah.
Just, you know, vote with your pocketbook.
Part of the problem is, this is probably a trivial example, but when I lived in Vermont, which is, you know, filled with small businesses, locally owned businesses, I needed to buy some pillows. And I couldn't find any store that sold pillows within 100 miles of Montpelier other than Walmart. I mean, they had effectively put out of business all the small mom and pop shops and the stores that used to sell furniture and bedding. What do you do when the only choice you've got is Walmart? Mary?
Yeah.
Yeah, so what do you do when you know?
Well, I say the same thing about banks. If you don't want banks gambling with your money, don't give it to them.
Yeah.
Deposit your money in a credit union or, you know, some local bank or some, you know, that don't play all those shady games.
Yeah, I agree with that. In fact, I encourage that. But, you know, on the flip side of that, now the banks are leading. They're lobbying really intensely here in Washington, D.C. to start taxing credit unions and basically turn them into community banks, and which is a terrible thing, but I think you raise a really good point, and maybe it's time for some serious boycott activity. McDonald's, for example, you know, paying lousy wages. There's got to be an alternative to McDonald's. So, Mary, thank you very much for the call. And thanks for watching Free Speech TV. On, I don't know if that was Dish or Direct, but in Chesapeake, Maryland. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with your calls here on Anything Goes Friday, Tom Hartman program. And I'm especially curious your thoughts on these white supremacists. It seems to me bizarre. I don't get it. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Edmund in Olympia, Washington, listening on KBCS. You had some thoughts on our first segment guest in this hour.
Yes. How's it going, Tom? I appreciate everything you do and everything you have to say. I just want to bring a, a liberal arts perspective. This is the swan song of white dominance in America. Is you have people like this gentleman. I don't even know if I can really call him that, but I still see examples of white privilege and white dominance all over the country, and it's the best example I think is probably in North Carolina, where they're trying to suppress on the black vote, and you know this is a perfect example of when multiculturalism gains a stronghold in America. This is the retreat and the reaction.
I think and this is something I'm guessing my guest would probably disagree with me on, or maybe just doesn't understand. I think that the biggest privilege associated with white privilege is never thinking about or even realizing that there is white privilege. It's
right.
It's like a fish in water. They don't know that they're in water. And
yeah,
people who aren't white get it. They get what white privilege is all about. And for most white people, it takes a fair amount of education for them to, you know, for the penny to drop, for them to go, oh, really? I don't have to, you know, wonder why that person said that to me. I don't have to, you know, wonder if they really had that apartment for rent or not. I don't have to wonder why I didn't get that job. It's not because of the skin, the color of your skin. When white people don't get a job, typically they think, okay, I didn't get the job. Somebody better qualified must have come along. When people of color don't get a job or don't get an apartment or you know, fill in the blank, there's a whole other layer that gets added on to that that white people never have to think about. And that, I think, exactly, is the biggest privilege of white privilege. But anyway.
I'm sure he's never had to experience gentrification before.
Yeah, for example, a good point. Yeah. Edmund, thank you very much for the call. Diane in San Jose, you wanted to talk about this racial issue.
Hold on. I'm going to turn off the TV. Hold on.
Okay. It's always good to turn the TV down as soon as you get put on hold.
Hold on, turn it off. Hold on. Sorry about that. Tom, I called before, and I wanted to tell you that I 3% of your show I don't agree with. 3%. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm having a hard time hearing you over the TV in the background, Diane. I need you to either turn that down totally or hang up and call back.
Hold on. I got it.
Okay, Diane, I'm going to put you on hold, and we will come back to you in a little bit. John in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. I'd like to comment, but I also like to ask you to do me a favor.
Sure.
The first is this caller that you had, the guy who you were interviewing.
Yeah, Kyle Hunt.
There are just volumes of things that are wrong with what he said, anti-Semitism.
I know the whole thing. There was no point in even challenging it because then I would have been basically validating it. I just thought, I wanted to share this worldview with y'all and say, hey, look, this is going on in America. Maybe we should be aware of it.
Yeah, I was just totally, the only thing I could say was, wow.
Yeah.
Now the favor I really would like for you to do is, I know that you talk to Senator Sanders on a regular basis on your program.
Pretty much only on the air, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much on the air, but you still have his ear. And my hope is that we have a problem here in the St. Louis area called the Bridgeton Landfill, where we have radioactive materials that were dumped there from after the war when they were making the first atomic bomb or nuclear bomb.
Uh-huh.
And they've now discovered that what they did was they just threw it in the ground. They didn't put any seal or cover on the bottom of it, so it's leaching into our groundwater system, and they've discovered not only did they discover strontium, they I think thorium or whatever. That, this stuff's even worse.
Yeah.
The worst of the worst radioactive stuff is leaching into our groundwater system. And I would like Senator Sanders along to come here with Senator McCaskill and Senator Blunt from Missouri, two senators, and take a look at this. And real, I mean,
we're John, the way to do that is for you to call Bernie's office here in Washington, D.C., and ask to talk to the person who is responsible for constituent affairs, even though you're, although I don't know, maybe that person only deals with people from Vermont, but there is a person in his office who would take that kind of a call. And if you call and talk to the people who answer the phone, they're very nice, they're very thoughtful. They actually do answer the phone there, unlike when you call Republicans, you get an answering machine, and pitch that to them. I can't commit to you that I will stand in as an intermediary for anybody else. But, you know, good luck. I wish you the very best with that. Peggy in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Peggy, a quick one, I hope.
Yes, big fan, Tom. And I wondered how, if you knew how Dianne Feinstein versus the CIA, you know, and the CIA versus her, does that tie in with John Kiriakou's arrest and sentencing for being a whistleblower?
I doubt it. I think that this has entirely to do with the Obama administration and the CIA basically covering up the crimes of the Bush administration. And I think that when Gerry Ford pardoned Richard Nixon, he established a very, very bad precedent, which has been followed by every president since, both Republican and Democratic, in ignoring the crimes of the previous administration. And there have been crimes in, I believe, every administration, some much greater than others. But the Obama administration pretty much came in and said, we're not going to, quote, criminalize politics, end quote, which was a Republican phrase. And I think it was a mistake. I think that, you know, if we wanted to be, thank you for the call, Peggy. If we want to be a moral example, we should be prosecuting war criminals. But Dianne Feinstein is responsible for looking at this program. Hang on just a second.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
She and the Senate Intelligence Committee having oversight over this program, the torture program, the Bush torture program. And they're pretty horrified by what they're discovering, and the CIA is trying to block them. Back, Tom Hartman here with you. Anything Goes Friday. And Howard in Hollywood, Florida. Hey, Howard.
A couple quick points and a serious question.
Okay.
I'm surprised that Kyle didn't bring up the fact that blacks should be eliminated from running in races because they're faster. That's number one.
Okay.
I think you should have...
Are you asserting that, or are you asserting that white supremacists assert that?
No. I'm being cute.
Oh, okay.
I think that you should have had Danielle scour your studio to make sure Daryl Issa hadn't snuck in and was turning off Bernie's mic.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
And serious now, and
yeah,
this is right up your alley. I think we could have an incredible advantage over the Republicans if we could get Eric Holder to conduct hearings on the caucus room meetings. Because I believe in taking this pledge that these 13 Republicans took, they're violating their oath of office.
Well, they apparently it was a pledge to each other. I mean, there's no official record of a pledge. It's just they all agreed that this was a good idea. We talked. I had Newt Gingrich on this program. He was there at the meeting, along with the members of the House and the Senate, and Frank Luntz. And I said, did this actually happen? Did these guys, these elected officials, actually commit to basically blowing up the Obama presidency for the next 4 or 8 years, whatever it takes? And he essentially said yes. And I said, isn't that a horrible thing? And he said, no, we're the opposition. That's what, you know, we oppose him. That's what opposition does, is it works to block your opponent. And now I think that that's a very coarse, you know, street fighting kind of reading of politics. I think that that's bad for the country, and I think it's frankly bad for the political parties, and it's certainly bad for average Americans. But it is a legitimate political perspective, is it not?
But don't you think, without knowing what he was going to, his policies were going to be, and his legislation was going to be...
Didn't matter, he was a Democrat.
Say, yeah, but they're still supposed to do what's best for their constituents.
They're supposed to, but what we saw during the Clinton presidency, you know, where they tried, you know, what, 15, 16, 17 different major investigations looking for something to impeach him for, you know, trying to grind the gears of government down, to, you know, slow things down. What you saw during the Clinton administration, what you saw during the Carter administration, and what you've seen during the Obama administration is that, you know, when Republicans have the White House, Democrats cooperate. Oh, what the hell? They collaborate with them, and even to things like invading Iraq. And when Democrats have the White House, Republicans do everything they can to politically destroy them. Republicans are playing scorched earth, you know, cage fight rules, and Democrats are playing, you know, baseball rules.
That's why I suggest hearings, which will be carried out until at least the next election, which will enlighten some even Republicans to the fact that they are blindly saying no to everything, whether it's good or not. That is a violation of their oath of office.
Well, first of all, Eric Holder's office would not be the appropriate venue. He's the chief prosecutor of the United States, the attorney general, and that would imply that it's a crime. And political activity can never be criminalized. Otherwise, you'd have frozen politics.
You're following the rules now,
but,
too.
I'm suggesting that if somebody was going to do this, it should be somebody in the Senate, which is controlled by the Democrats, and it should be the Senate equivalent of Daryl Issa's committee over in the House of Representatives, or maybe the Senate Ethics Committee, and I'm not sure who's the chair of that, but it would be a Democrat. But the problem with having the Democrats do that kind of thing is the Democrats have done enough dirty politics in their lifetime that the Republicans would just pull that out and it would just become a, you know, everybody's airing everybody else's dirty underwear kind of thing, or dirty laundry, or whatever the old phrase is.
Well, I still think this would do what Daryl Issa has been doing with Benghazi and with the IRS.
Yeah, I do. I agree with you.
This thing.
I agree with you. And the pushback from the Republicans would be just as aggressive as Mr. Cummings' pushback has been, but I agree, Howard. I think that if the Democrats were to do this in a high profile way, but that's, you know, that's the unfortunate thing, is that the Democrats don't break kneecaps. They don't play, and they're not going to spend hours and hours and hours on a lie or on something that they know is frivolous or that they know that they themselves have done. Whereas Republicans will do that in a heartbeat. But, you know, it's an idea, and you put it out there, Howard. Thanks a lot for the call. Diane in San Jose. You want to try this again, Diane?
Hi, Tom. Sorry for shouting. I turned off the TV.
Thank you.
Tom, I wanted to tell you, I do agree with, I only disagree with about 10% of what you say. You know,
but
that's still good to me, you know?
Okay.
Are you there?
I am. I'm listening.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, so I wanted to tell you that I watch your show, David's show, and sometimes two friends of mine come over, they're both Caucasian, and they hate you guys. And I asked them, why? What's wrong? I said, I'm going to join the David Packman show because he's really great. He helps me. You know, David is really great. And to disagree with 2% of what someone thinks and feels is not a big thing.
Diane, could I ask what your point is? I appreciate your agreement with 97-98% of what we're saying, but what's your point?
I might have had a mini show, says it's funny. So I'll be clear. Both of them told me, when I was a teacher, they were beaten up by a gang of blacks of three people. The other woman was also beaten up. They were savagely beaten by black people. So I'm saying I can understand how some people are terrified, and I hear that there's a lot of black.
Diane, typically the stories that, you know, this is how not just racism, but all sorts of, you know, weird theories hop, is they always come to you in the form of, I know somebody who, which is what you're doing right now. I know somebody who, I know a white person who was beaten up by a black person. The fact of the matter is, if a white person is beaten up by a black person in the United States, that black person is much more likely to end up in prison than if a white person beats up a black person, is the white person likely to end up in prison. And that's a racial and systemic injustice that we should all be speaking out against.
When I complain about Mexican gangbangers, and I have Mexican, I love Mexican people. When I try to tell people, hey, don't wear red when you come over, you know, it's not, you know, I don't want them to be hurt, but there are gangbangers in San Jose.
I'm sure there are. And let's do something about that rather than identifying people just, you know, hey, you know, there's this race having, you know, it's Diane, I'm going to move along. This is a rabbit hole. Sam in Point Pleasant, West Virginia. Hey, Sam, you have a question.
I got a brother Hartman and then I've got a Professor Hartman. Can I do it?
You can talk quickly, right, please.
Brother Hartman, you know, I've been with you guys 8 years now. And you've been a good mentor, you and Louise. And,
thank you.
You know, I try to think people are people. Everyone's a person. And their attitude is their God's given choice. And that's really the way I feel about it anymore. Mm-hmm. And you know what I mean?
That sounds good to me, Sam. What's your point?
Well, that's it.
Okay. What was your question?
My question is, over here in West Virginia, you know about that there, Freedom Industries? This is Professor Hartman, sir.
Okay, yeah. Freedom Industries is the company that went bankrupt after they dumped that stuff that smells like licorice that poisons people into your water.
Right. Okay,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
All right. Now, they're saying that they got a law. Today's paper, I already give the paper away, but what I read was that they're going to try to sue the APA, EPA, I mean, and DEP and all them people for not catching them sooner, for not busting them sooner.
So wait a minute. The company that polluted your water in West Virginia is going to sue the EPA for not stopping them sooner from polluting the water? Really?
Yeah, I think they're going to try that.
Wow.
Did you do that?
Anything's possible, Sam. Anything's possible. It doesn't surprise me. Thanks a lot for the call. Mark in Chicago, listening on CPT. Hey, Mark.
Hi, how you doing? Hey, I wonder if I could switch topics from the one that I told your screener just to go a little anything.
Sure, it's Anything Goes Friday. You can talk about anything you want.
Sure. Hey, you know, I want to take you to task about one thing. You seem to want to reduce the problem of homelessness to mental illness, when actually that's really only one small part of it.
I agree. I'd say it's a large part of it, but it's not even the majority part of it. It's not more than, it's probably 20-30% of it, but there's a whole bunch of slices of other pieces of it, you know, systemic poverty and lack of other services, and it's.
Yeah, I would say that. Right. I mean, I would say that. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but.
Well, the one thing I would add is, you know, 32 years of Reaganomics and the banksters stealing $8 trillion from all the rest of us in 2008.
When manufacturing moved out, then manufacturing used to be the tax base for the cities. So then, when they moved out, property taxes were the tax base for the cities. So housing became very expensive, and then of course all the jobs left and everything like that.
Yep.
So anyway, well, otherwise I can talk about the other topic, but I guess I only get one topic, right?
Yeah, that's generally our policy, and we've only got 15 seconds left. So I think we'll have to agree that homelessness is a large problem in the United States, and that it's not just mental illness. And this is, and Mark, thanks a lot for the call. And this is something that we really need to be paying attention to. We really need to be working on is this epidemic of homelessness in the United States. It's been 6 or 8 months. We did a whole, pretty much a day on homelessness sometime back. And I'm trying to remember the statistic of the number of children, you know, some large cohort of the homeless, like about a third of children.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And that number is radically higher than it was in 1980. And I think that we can attribute most of that to Reaganomics and Republicanism. And welcome back, Armin in Bradenton, Florida. Hey, Armin, what's on your mind today?
Please let me have the floor just for a minute.
You got it.
I understand Kyle's dilemma that he's in, and I don't think he's a racist. And here's the point. like I suggested on your show, let's just put all the facts on the table. The truth, the facts. Let's just put it all out on the table and see what percent after World War II, when we made everything in this country and we defeated the evil Nazis, what percent of the white class paid more in taxes up until this point now than they took out in salaries and or government benefits. Let's take the blacks, see what percent they paid more in taxes to the government than they took out in salaries or benefits, and the Hispanics. And then I want to ask you, Tom, once you get all those facts and statistics from World War II till now, put all those on a table, we'll sift through all this and we'll come to terms in reality, because I think you are an honest person. I've listened to you for 10 years or longer. You've taught me so much, Tom, so please don't cut me off. And here's my point. I say they're a tag team, and logically, you use a lot of logic because you are brilliant. You're very intelligent. And logic would tell you that the Democrats are a lot closer to where the country really needs to be. With enough effort and work, they're night and day closer than the Republicans. The Republicans are slash and burn, the 1%.
Yeah, let's go. Let's, Armin, let's go back to your first point. After World War II, labor unions were used in the United States to systematically keep blacks out of the labor force.
I don't think that's right. I don't see your.
I know this for a fact. I mean,
okay, but let's, Tom, please, Tom, let me, please, before you dilute what I'm trying to say inherently. Incorrectly.
What I'm saying is that the statistics that you're pointing to, Armin, are...
Let's see who's paying in. The fact of the matter is the slaves we have now are white, and I want to hear you. I want to hear you if the tag team in Washington, and I'm not saying Senator Sanders. I think he's a very honorable person, and he knows what he's up against. I hear him on your show all the time. There's too much money up here. There's just too much money. That's unprincipled people. And too much money gives us what we got. But the fact is, I want to hear you, if they get their TPP passed, I want to hear you if immigration reform goes through, and I want to hear you together with repealing Obamacare, and then they end up paying for it by screwing the private sector middle class, what used to be in this country, by cutting Medicare and Social Security. So then you'll have the elite billionaires, you'll have your thin veneer like in Mexico, of the public workers, and here it's public unions, and you'll have everybody else, 10 people for every job, and then they'll want to throw their sales tax in, and they'll have what they really want, their panacea, and they'll have their hedge money of the global military.
Yeah, but we can disagree on nuance and detail, but I don't broadly disagree with that assertion. But the fact of the matter is that it's white people oppressing middle class and working class people of all races.
10% of the population is 25% of the billionaires, and they are Jewish.
Oh, so you're going off on the, it's all the Jews. Oh, man. Armin, I thought you were better than that. Thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before that. Welcome back. 10 minutes before the hour. And let's check in with Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by goatsfortheoldgoat.com, about what's going on in the world. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom.
Now, I started this program this hour with Kyle Hunt, the spokesperson for the White Man March that is going on tomorrow. And just ended with Armin telling me the Jews are running the world. Yeah, I need some sanity, please. What's
oh, and you came here.
Yeah, indeed.
All right, then.
Bad
okay.
idea.
Well, I hope I have time for my interesting history story.
Okay.
I'm going to try and pace myself. Okay. Talks between Secretary of State John Kerry and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov over this weekend's referendum on Crimea joining Russia broke down after nearly 6 hours today. Basically, they couldn't agree, and nobody's terribly surprised. Western leaders warned that sanctions were looming. Kerry carried a last-minute diplomatic appeal to Lavrov at a meeting in London, exhorting Moscow to pull its thousands of troops out of Crimea and respect Ukraine's borders. But Lavrov is saying
that President Vladimir Putin is not prepared to make any decision regarding Ukraine until after the referendum on Sunday. Lavrov said there was no common view over how to proceed. So the referendum is almost certain to go ahead. It's almost certain that the results will be that Crimea will join Russia. And then come Monday, we'll be having a very interesting conversation about sanctions from the U.S. and the EU.
Right. I still don't get where the American interest is in this.
I don't know the answer to that, and you probably should speak to some of the business interests who've been lobbying on Capitol Hill.
Well, I know Chevron, you know, in November cut a $10 billion deal with the Ukrainian government. I'm assuming that they have a dog in this fight. But
well, there are many business interests who have big dogs with Russia.
Uh-huh.
And
oh, yeah.
Also want a big soft pedal.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see whether that is coming to bear.
Yep.
And, of course, Congress is leaving town for a week's recess, having not been able to agree on an aid bill, as, indeed, they're not really able to agree on very much.
They haven't agreed either to extend long-term unemployment benefits. So.
Well, the Senate came up with a deal last night with five Republicans on board to extend unemployment benefits for 5 months retroactively.
And why didn't Harry Reid call for a vote last night?
Well, that's the very interesting question. Why didn't he call for a vote last night? We don't know the answer to that question. They leave today, as I said, for a week's recess. And they will vote on it when they get back. And that is an unanswerable question. Maybe he felt he wasn't sure that they had the votes at that point. He is in support of this deal. But they do have five Republicans. So that does, if all Democrats vote for it, and I believe they think that they've got all the Democrats, so that does give them sufficient votes.
Yeah. Okay. And so and then it gets thrown into John Boehner's court where
then it goes to the House and its progress is uncertain, to say the best scenario. But there are pieces of it that could do quite well. I mean, it's not a completely unpalatable bill.
Right. Right. Okay.
Investigators are now focusing increasingly on foul play behind the Malaysian air jet.
As in a hijacking?
Well, they're looking at possible hijacking, piracy, pilot suicide. This based on radar data and also the route that they believe that the plane took when it veered off course was a route that could only have been deliberately set either by flying the jet manually or by programming the autopilot.
Interesting. And it was a route that is a normal air route if you're trying to get from Malaysia
Correct.
To the Middle East, right?
Correct. Yeah, it was towards the Bay of Bengal in the Indian Ocean. So they don't know what happened, whether it was the pilot, a pilot, or whether it was somebody in the plane. They don't know what happened to the plane. They don't know whether the plane landed somewhere.
That black box is going to be fascinating when they
find it. It's going to be absolutely fascinating. So it's a complete and utter mystery, but they are getting somewhere.
And I noticed that the Indian government is looking at some 400 or 500 uninhabited islands off the coast of India. Shades of Lost.
It's getting, I mean, the whole thing's getting very, very strange.
Yeah.
Yeah. Republican Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan, whose remarks about inner-city poverty were described by another member of Congress as a thinly veiled racial attack, has accepted the invitation of the Congressional Black Caucus to discuss poverty. What he said was, on Bill Bennett's Morning in America show, he talked about a tailspin of culture in our inner cities in particular, of men not working and just generations of men not even thinking about working or learning the value and the culture of work.
And then when he tried to say, I wasn't talking about black people, he said, I live in an inner city. Right.
But he said he was inarticulate.
Yeah.
But he's accepted this invitation, says he would welcome it, and he would appreciate the opportunity to have a constructive conversation. So we'll see how that goes.
Sure. The education of Mr. Ryan.
It's going to be very interesting. There was a Clinton document dump today, several thousand pages from the Clinton Presidential Library. One of them is about
about guidance, seeking guidance on whether Al Gore should raise the issue of archival data, Russian archival data, on Lee Harvey Oswald in a meeting with the Russian Prime Minister. Anyway, it turned out that National Security Council staffer wrote to White House public affairs staffer expressing concern that Russian intelligence agencies might have doctored the contents of files related to Kennedy's assassination. Even worse than their probability having removed information that makes them look bad is the possibility that they might have inserted some disinformation to try to embarrass USG, Mr. Kaufman wrote.
Very interesting. I think, you know, I thought it was kind of a given that, that Oswald was an intelligence officer. I mean, there was a bunch of them that all trained together at Natsugi. He was one of them. They all defected to, they all studied Russian together. They all defected to the Soviet Union at the same time. They all got basically busted together. And when Oswald came back to the United States, he was met at the airport by John Tower, who bought his ticket and rushed through customs. He was never even debriefed or interrogated by the FBI. I mean, that's what you do with CIA assets.
There you go.
So, very interesting. Anyhow, Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Victoria.
Thank you.
Have a great weekend.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends. Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. 6 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. It's Anything Goes Friday. It's the final hour of our program. Senator Sanders was on earlier, had a lot of great things to say. Plus, we had Kyle Hunt from the White Man March. I just want to say it one more time. And some very unusual phone calls as a consequence of that, that I think the most fascinating part of white privilege, the most privileged part of white privilege, is that white people don't have to know about white privilege. That's the biggest privilege, is that they never sit and think, did that happen to me because I'm white? Which is something that happens, and Kyle Hunt, our guest, was going off on how Jews are not white people. Well, I'm sure that there are some people who grew up Jewish who have had the experience throughout their lives of asking themselves, did that just happen to me because I'm Jewish? So, anyhow, I guess maybe we should call it WASP privilege, because there are even some people who, at least up until the Kennedy administration, would have said, did that happen to me because I'm Catholic? Jack Kennedy, our first Catholic president. But in any case, I find this whole thing fascinating, that these kinds of movements emerge during times of economic difficulty, because there's this assumption that it's a zero-sum game. If somebody else is winning, I must be losing. Now, it isn't a zero-sum game, doesn't have to be a zero-sum game, but that's how it's played, particularly by the bigots and the people who are leading these folks around. People who may be, well-intentioned of all races. I mean, we've seen this historically in all these different racial groups. You find these very, very fundamentalist, very nationalistic is the wrong word, racistic movements. And I think that there's a piece of cultural anthropology here that is just absolutely fascinating, which is why, rather than getting into a fight with this guy, I just wanted to let him have his say. And I kept asking him, and he never did give me an answer. I was genuinely curious, and I'm going to see if I can continue to find somebody who can give me an answer to this. When, as a white guy, did you come to the conclusion that you were the oppressed minority? Or the oppressed majority, for that matter. When did you come to the conclusion? What experience was it that caused that? Paul, in Lucerne, California. Hey, Paul, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Well, I got a couple things to say about your guest. For one, his definition of genocide can be actually applied to what we've done to black people in this country today, even.
Oh, yeah.
I apologize for any crimes of the past. What about the crimes of today? Clevis Carter, a young black male going to college in Arkansas, two other people in the car with him, don't go to jail, but he goes to jail. Well, actually, he doesn't go to jail because he gets shot in the back of the head by a cop.
Trayvon Martin.
All right. Trayvon Martin, yeah. And the reason why that guy is worried about losing white privilege is the sense of superiority that comes with it. I am superior than a black. That's what they're worried about. Mm. They're not superior than nobody. They have to face the cold, hard fact that we're all the same, and we're all being oppressed by, actually, a rich white guy.
Right. By the man.
That's the facts.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the facts, and they can't deal with them.
And the man loves it when we fight with each other over things like race. I mean, they absolutely love it. It's like it's divide and conquer.
Yeah, that's it right there.
You know, Jamie Dimon just tosses another $1 million on the, you know, in the bank, and the politicians, hey, you know, look at this. It's spectator sport.
Yeah.
No, excellent point, Paul. Thank you for calling and making it. Very, very, very cogent point. Sarah in Joliet, Illinois, listening to WCPT. Hey, Sarah.
Hi, how are you, Tom? I love your show.
Thank you. What's up?
Well, really quick, number one, I wasn't aware that religion determined your race because, you know, I know I think Jewish people, you know, many of them are white, but, you know, that's another point altogether. But,
I was a little surprised when he said that because I always thought that that was a very kind of fringe minority perspective held by radical anti-Semites who, you know, of the Nazi lineage kind of thing. Anyway, back to you.
Well, my point was that you kept asking this guy what he felt, you know, what was it that happened to him? And he just, you know, couldn't seem to grasp, you know, your question. And it seems to me, because I grew up in a, you know, family that had some, you know, older racist people in it. And I think a lot of it comes from their feeling that everybody else is getting entitlement things like food stamps, link card, while they're going out and working, you know, 40, 50 hours a week, and, you know, their income level isn't that low, and while all these people are getting all these things and I'm not, and it just feeds into it a lot. But, you know, to be honest, when I go down to the link office, a lot of the majority of the people, you know, in a lot of towns are actually, you know, struggling white families rather than...
Well, and beyond that, I'll tell you, you know, I've never been on food stamps, but I have been on unemployment, and I had to stand in line for 2 hours just to, you know, to get my unemployment. Every couple of weeks, and this was 40 years ago, but you know, I have known, you know, I've known people on food stamps, and it's a difficult and degrading, and I think the percentage of people who are voluntarily doing that is very, very low, and the proof of that is that when you do WPA kind of programs like Franklin Roosevelt did, or when you have something close to full employment, like at the end of the Carter presidency when our unemployment rate was just around 3%, then you don't have large numbers of people on these basically welfare programs. People would much rather work. It's just, you know, when work is not available to them. So, you know, I'd say that into somebody who's working and has a job and says, oh, those people, they're getting something for nothing. Well, you know, if you put yourself in their place, I don't think you'd want to be there.
No. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Thank you, Sarah. Good talking with you. Michael in Brookline, Massachusetts. Hey, Michael.
Yeah, I was going to talk about DCMA, and I may, but I want to make a couple of comments about I'm white and Jewish, and this whole thing is ridiculous.
Yep.
But it's a consequence of not really being patriotic. Take Germany. In Germany, it's Deutschland über alles, meaning Germany above everybody.
Right.
And people identify with each other, and black, white, or green, you're a German. And you may screw the rest of the world, but you don't screw your own. In the United States, it's dog eat dog. It's everybody against everybody else. So the Jews screw the Irish, and the Irish screw the blacks, and so on and so forth. You don't have this in a country with very strong patriotism. We don't have it. We're too inhomogeneous and too easy to exploit one antagonism from another. That was the main thing I wanted to talk about, if I have the time, is the robbery that the cell phone companies do.
Yeah.
Under something called the Digital Millennial Copyright Act.
Right.
This is exactly analogous to owning an automobile, except you buy it from ExxonMobil, who puts additives in your car which make it impossible to buy gas from anybody else. And now it's gotten a little better if ExxonMobil gives you permission to use other vendors, you could use it. And to top it off, this law says you can pay $500,000 fine and spend 5 years in jail for a felony if you dare to use your own personal phone with another carrier. I couldn't make this stuff up.
Yeah.
You're
absolutely right. You know, and I think we're the only country in the world where this is the case. If you jailbreak a phone, in Europe, iPhones, you can pop SIM cards in and out of them. But in the United States, you try doing that, and you can go to prison.
I mean, the thing about that law, though, is I suspect it's not very heavily enforced, because the first time an international executive was jailed for 5 years for, unlocking his phone would be the last time the law would be enforced.
Yeah, I agree, but I think that they do selective enforcement of this, you know, to make examples of people.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And it's not a good thing. And also, you can go to jail for downloading or emailing to somebody else pictures or things like that off the web. And I'm not talking about porn. I mean, just copyright. And welcome back, Steve, in Weiser, Idaho, watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. Hey, Steve, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I want to name the town June because that's the month of the Old Time Natural Fiddle Festival contest. But when my brain scans like YPWPOL, it says Eurosapien, because Europe's the peninsula of Asia, and there's also Eurosapien or Asians. But like one time I asked this gal, some younger gals, what sounds better, Fabes or Fabas? They said Fabes, so that's what we are, Fabas, formerly aquatic bipedal apes. I'm like that one guy always said, like when my brain scans white people and it's talking in an evil, aka racist type form, says those guys said white backwards nam should be a Caucasoid XY, because until about 45 days in pregnancy, that friggin' backwards nam was a double X chromosome.
Oh, okay, Steve, you've lost me, but thank you for the call. Michael, watching Free Speech TV in Dublin, Virginia, you wanted to talk about fertilizer in Russia.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, sir. Hi. The American interest in this whole Ukrainian situation is in the commodity market, such as potash, which is an extremely valuable fertilizer.
Potash.
Which,
right?
Excuse me?
Isn't it pronounced potash?
Okay, maybe potash. I'm just pronouncing how it's spelled.
Okay.
Okay, maybe potash. But now it is used in, is extremely valuable fertilizer, biofertilizer, which the Koch brothers does have an enormous interest in that biofertilizer industry.
Sure.
Now Russia, Ukraine, being one of the largest producers with Canada of potash as well. And so there's an oligarch, a Ukrainian, Russian oligarch who bought into this industry, a billion-dollar industry, the potash market is. Without it, fertilizers, crops don't grow.
Right. This contributes a lot of the potassium to fertilizers.
Yeah, the whole works. It's necessary for the growth of wheat, corn, which, by the way, Ukraine is the fifth largest exporter of wheat and the third largest exporter of corn. Now, potash is also a necessary ingredient in oil extraction.
So
I didn't know that.
Oh yeah, this is a resource. This is a resource that's necessary for food, for the food supply of the world.
So you're saying that the conflict in Ukraine is a conflict over natural resources?
Oh yeah, quite possibly. It's one of the largest reasons. And with the for example, you have a large shale deposit. Ukraine sits on top of a large natural.
Oh yeah, gas. Yeah. Chevron just cut a multi-billion-dollar fracking deal with them.
Exactly. So you have Russia state officials and business executives who are inextricably linked in what's going on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and not to mention American corporations.
The Koch brothers. Yeah, the Koch brothers.
I don't know if the Koch brothers have anything to do with Ukraine, but you know, nothing would surprise me. Michael, thank you for the call. We'll be back with more of your thoughts, my comments, and the news of the day here on Anything Goes Friday on the Tom Hartman Show. Past the hour, fair and only slightly unbalanced, the Tom Hartman program. Dan in San Diego, California, listening to AM760's web stream. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Yeah, I had several comments, but one thing you mentioned was privilege and whites being slow to acknowledge it. And I think
slow to realize it, I think.
Yeah, realizing it, yeah. And I think it has to do with, you know, apathy, you know. Maybe it's human nature, you know, until your ox gets gored, you know, you don't, it's out of sight, out of mind.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
And I guess, you know, the on several of the things that Kyle mentioned, he mentioned civil rights laws being passed, you know, but not for whites. And, you know, yeah, you know, there's a reason for that. It's because whites already had their civil rights.
Yep.
And then he talked about whites being slaves and indentured servants. And he says, well, it was whites being oppressing them, you know, other whites. So why doesn't he hate whites? And
right.
It's kind of the same thing about crime. There was one caller who mentioned, you know, like the, I think the Mexican gangs. Mm-hmm. Most crime is white on white, you know. So whites should be afraid more of other whites than they are of blacks, you know.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. That is the vast majority of crime that white people experiences, but from other white people.
Yeah. Anyway, so I just wanted to point out those flaws in his argument.
Okay. Good job, Dan. Thank you for the call. Robert in Great Court, South Carolina. Hey, Robert.
Yes. Good afternoon. I think they covered what I wanted to talk about, but I'd like to change my comment if I could.
Sure.
I wonder how many people know that in the slavery days that a man's children could be used as collateral to secure a loan.
Because they were property.
Yes,
yeah.
Children were property.
Yeah.
That was true with my great, I think three times great-grandmother.
She was a child who was used to secure a loan?
Yes, and she was a slave briefly.
My goodness. I'm sorry to hear that.
It turned out well for her because evidently someone who recognized her, grandfather, was able to purchase her freedom. But still, she was at one time she was a slave.
Yeah,
because she was regarded as property.
Right, it's remarkable. Robert, thank you for the call and thanks for sharing your story. Jerry in Long Island, New York, listening on WBAI. Hey, Jerry, you want to talk about Ukraine?
Yeah, I want to talk about the Ukraine, especially. I like to discuss the aspects to the situation that I think are failing to be adequately covered and discussed by the corporate-owned so-called mainstream media. For instance, there's been virtually no discussion in the corporate-owned media at all about what I believe could be the true economic impact of the Ukraine and what would happen if the Ukraine both joined the European Union and it got a $15 billion bailout from them. Especially since if you look at virtually every other country that's both joined the European Union and gotten a bailout from them, there's been these strings of some kind of austerity attached to the bailout, and I think it would be naive to think that anything would be different with respect to the Ukraine. If it joined the EU, the European Union, there would obviously be these strings of austerity of some kind attached to the $15 billion bailout they need. And the other aspect of the situation that's failing to be adequately discussed in the corporate media, in my opinion, is the inconsistent and contradictory nature of the U.S. government under the Obama administration seeming to have a pro-democracy foreign policy in the Middle East, but then supporting an armed ouster of a democratically elected president in Ukraine, who is nowhere near as bad as the infamous, butcherous, mass-murdering, unelected dictator of Syria. And yet the Ukraine president is being opposed by people who were shooting the police in the streets and burning buildings and doing things we'd never tolerate in this country. And they're doing things that fit the Black's Law dictionary definition of being an insurgent, which is a person who, for political purposes, engages in armed, and I emphasize the word armed, hostility against an established government, which is exactly what happened in the Ukraine. I mean, this guy, whatever we think of him, the elected president of the Ukraine, the fact of the matter is, whatever we think of him, he was democratically elected, and it's been unproven for a fact that the people firing on the demonstrators were government snipers, number one. And number two, like I said, some of the protesters were doing things that were pretty violent and that we would never tolerate in New York City, in Washington, D.C., Los Angeles, or Chicago. Can you imagine if we had demonstrators shooting at the police and throwing fire bombs or some kind of incendiary device?
No, remember when, was it in Philadelphia, that, and I think it was the Sudanese Liberation Army, although it might have been some other quote, radical Black group, end quote, where they literally firebombed the police, firebombed the top of the building, and it burned through and killed them and killed, you know, I mean, it's just, but, you know, U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Victoria Nuland, she, you know, that this leaked telephone conversation, she was basically saying that we want, the United States wants a banker to be the president of Ukraine, which is how it worked out. The guy who's in charge is a banker. And if you go in, this very interesting blog over at Filbersol, filbersole.wordpress.com, reprinted over at Democratic Underground by I Ching Carpenter. They're talking about, you know, is the whole Ukraine thing shock doctrine? But the IMF offered Yanukovych a bailout, but it required doubling the prices for gas and electricity. Lifting a ban on the private sale of Ukraine's rich agricultural lands, a ban on ending the ban on the sale of state assets. In other words, letting rich people basically come in, or rich corporations, and buy land, state assets, devalue the currency, cuts to funding for schools, cuts to funding for their essentially social security programs, their pensions. And in exchange for this, they get $4 billion when they're $35 billion in the hole. And then Putin came along and said, I'll give you $15 billion, no strings attached. And, you know, guess which deal they took. But it's like there's more going on here than meets the eye. Jerry, thank you for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And it'll probably be a few years before we look back. But I think if you look at those, Jerry, your point is well taken. If you look at those countries that went along with it, ouch. It's the place where despair is not an option, the Tom Hartman Program. And talk media for the sane among us. I'm starting to wonder. Jim in Chillicothe, Illinois. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Yeah, I experienced something today with Medicare Part D.
Okay.
And it was
this is the drug benefit,
frustrating and pretty heartening.
Okay.
Because I heard your program a couple of weeks ago about the Indian companies sending over 40% of our imported generics,
right?
And half of them are junk,
right?
And we can't sue them.
And
today I looked up my letter I got from Medicare Part D, and it explained to me that my premiums dropped and my copays dropped because of financial difficulties.
Well, that's good.
And so I had the doctor write out a script for name brand antibiotic. So when I went to get it, or was called the pharmacy to get it, see when it was ready, they informed me that they denied my script because it was name brand when there was a generic available. And it was almost $450 for 28 doses of medicine. Yeah, and this is amoxicillin.
Oh, man, that's been generic for decades.
Yeah, but now it's I think it was $438 for 28 pills.
That's incredible. It makes you wonder if the pharmaceutical companies are behind the stories that the generics are no good. Except that they, you know, in many cases, it's the big pharma companies that own the companies that make the generics. So that's incredible. Jim,
January 1st of this year, I'm on morphine sulfate for pain. My the cost of the morphine went from $227 to $428 overnight.
Wow. Yeah. This is we've been seeing this for years, but it's really been picking up the last few years. I think it's, you know, the parasites or the predators rather, just, you know, getting everything they can as fast as they can. Jim, thank you for the call. I wish you the very best. We really have to, frankly, I mean, Medicare Part D does not allow Medicare to negotiate drug prices, and then you end up, if it's a copay or if you're in the donut hole, you end up paying for it. And all because the Republicans wrote that bills to prevent the government from negotiating drug prices. It's just wrong. Donald in Aurora, Illinois. Hey, Donald, thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, I was listening to that child person that was on the thing, and it really got me angry because, you know, I was born in 1947, and I've been through a lot of stuff during the 60s and everything else. One thing this kid didn't understand is the fact that what kills me about the white people is the hypocrisy. It's funny how the blacks aren't black when they have to fight for this country. When I was drafted in 1966, there were plenty of blacks going to war with us. They're certainly not black when they have to pay taxes in this country, provided they're given a job that could reach a tax bracket. And they're certainly not black when they catch that winning touchdown, football that takes their team to the Super Bowl. But when it comes to running for office, getting educated, or getting a job in this country, their color comes into the picture, and it just really aggravates me. He was nothing but a white racist, as far as I'm concerned, and probably Republican. And I have a newsflash for him, too. This poor president was handed down all the crap that white presidents and white politicians have caused for all of us. We lost a lot of money, including myself, during the crash of, 2008, by a white president. We got sent to war by two wars by a white president. The Vietnam War was not even what's his name? Robert McNamara was crying on the air telling us that the war was not necessary. Oh, really? 58,000 of our fellow veterans are sitting on a wall. All that's left of them is their names. And all of a sudden, because you lose a war, you gain a conscience. I'm just sick of it.
Yeah. Well said, Donald. Thank you. Excellent rant for Anything Goes Friday. Mark in LaSalle, Michigan. Richard Wolf said something you wanted to quote?
Yes, thanks for having me on, Tom. Love your show.
Thank you.
According to Professor Wolf, in the year 2000, when Al Gore allegedly lost the election, the Democratic Party received 17.5% of its funding from people who were able to donate at least $1,500 or more, basically the rich people.
Right.
And that upon Obama's reelection here in 2012, the Democrats received 52.5% of their funding from people who were able to donate at least $1,500 or more.
Yeah. Keep in mind the rules of the game were very different because in October of 2010, the Supreme Court handed down Citizens United.
Yes. Yes. Well, I'm just afraid that during the next cycle, you're going to see that number be even higher.
I think you're absolutely right. And the Supreme Court has done an incredible disservice to this country by striking down legislation that was passed on a bipartisan basis. McCain-Feingold, the most recent example of it, bipartisan legislation that dialed back the influence of money in politics. And the Supreme Court said, oh, no, we can't have that. Or at least the five right-wingers, who, two of whom on numerous occasions have been hanging out with or sucking up to the Koch brothers and other billionaires. It's just so wrong. This Roberts Court has to be in one of the most corrupt courts we've ever seen in the United States. It's terrible. Mark, thank you for the call. Joe in Hollywood, Florida. Hey, Joe, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How you doing today?
I'm fine. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to let you know there's not much of a difference between Paul Ryan. Well, actually, there is a bit of a difference between Paul Ryan and Kyle, your previous guest. I guess one is more overt and aware of his. Well, actually, no. Both of them aren't aware of white privilege. Maybe both of them are just as ignorant as one is from the other, except the other one is an march organizer and the other one is a politician. I don't know what's more dangerous.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting when I was looking at the places where this white man's march is going on, and I told this disclaimer, I'm black, so I just found this whole thing hilarious and interesting at the same time. And I don't see any marches. I see marches in Denver, Colorado, and certain other places, but I don't see any in Harlem or Watts or, you know, any of those places.
Good luck with that, right? Yeah. I think your point about white privilege and Paul Ryan is so spot on, because for Paul Ryan to go off on Bill Bennett's radio show about lazy people in the inner city, and then later to claim that he didn't realize that that was racial rhetoric, really, really clarifies the point that I keep making, which is that the core of white privilege that I think white people are completely unaware of is that they can be unaware of it. That is the essence of white privilege, is that white people never in their lives have to ask themselves the question, did that happen to me because I'm white? Whereas people of other races, other nationalities, other, you know, and in some cases different ethnicities or religions have throughout their lives had to ask themselves, did that happen to me because I'm black? Did that happen to me because I'm Hispanic? Did that happen to me because I'm Jewish? And did that happen to me because I'm a woman? And white men, at least white Anglo-Saxon men and Protestant and increasingly Catholic, just the question never even occurs to them. And that's the incredible privilege of white privilege. And obviously Paul Ryan is steeped in that, or he never would have even said what he said. So,
and to be honest, I think the best way to deal with that is take him and the rest of the Republican Party, since they like to talk about how people are lazy in the inner city. Since they're in D.C., why don't they just go down to DuPont Circle or Marlboro Heights and go tell that straight to the people, since they want to tell blacks that they're lazy and Hispanics that they're lazy. Why don't they just go on down?
Except DuPont Circle's been totally gentrified. you're a few years behind. But, yeah, point well taken, Joe. Point very well taken. Thanks for the call. Corey in Victor, New York. Hey, Corey, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Well, thanks for having me on. I'd just like to have you know that you're catching the young crowd here.
Cool.
But, yes, I wanted to talk about, this is coming up a lot. It's being sold to the conservative media to a lot of middle-class people. It's about the requirement of welfare or the requirement of drug tests for welfare.
Right.
And basically the main point, this has been brought up by you, I think, several times, but, things like that, they don't necessarily solve any of the problems of, you know, why people become addicted.
No, in fact, people on food stamps are less likely to use drugs than any other sector of our population.
Right, that's interesting. So I just think it's very ironic how many of these conservative states that are implementing this, they're fighting for constitutional rights, whether it be gun rights or abortion or whatever else that is that they fight for, but yet they support something that by many standards, it's probably by a lot of people's standards, violate constitutional rights, but with also without solving the core problem.
Yeah, then they're violating the Fourth Amendment. This is an unreasonable search and seizure of your body and your bodily fluids and or breaths or whatever it may be. And you're right, it does not solve any problem. There is, drug abuse among food stamp users is not a problem in the United States. Drug testing people who want food stamps or any other form of government assistance is just a way of adding insult to injury. It's just a slap in the face. These laws are passed so that, thank you for the call, so that, you know, smug middle class, or in some cases even angry working class people can say, "Ad got them." And it's just, it is so small. It's such a sad commentary on where our politics have gone, that that's where the Republican Party is.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And it's even sadder that that's the kind of platform on which Republicans regularly get elected. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Bruce in Portland, Oregon, listening on Free Speech TV. Hey, Bruce, what's up?
Well, I'd like to give a shout-out to Alf Rankin, who won by a squeaker in Minnesota. He really needs support.
Is he up for re-election this year?
Huh?
Is Al up for re-election this year?
Yes.
Yeah, it sounds about right. 6 years, yeah. Okay, well,
right.
Yeah.
And also Jeff Merkley here in Portland, he's a new senator, and I think they're targeting...
Oh, they definitely are targeting Jeff Merkley. He's a good progressive. And I'm sure they're targeting Al Franken. Yes. And they're both people that we should be supporting, yes.
And do you know any way of finding out who needs support in the House of Representatives? Like the League of Conservation Voters, would they have information that I could get?
I would start with the House Progressive Caucus, and the co-chairs of that are Raul Grijalva of California, I believe he's California, and what's his name? The only Muslim in office. Oh, Keith Ellison. Thank you. Momentary brain fart there. Keith Ellison of Minnesota. And you could contact their offices. Just, you know, call congress.org and get the phone number for the House switchboard, and just say, "I'd like to talk to Representative Grijalva's office or Representative Ellison's office," and ask the person in their office, you know, for the Congressional Progressive Caucus, are there any particular races that you guys are saying, please help us out with? And I'm quite sure they'll let you know. And if they do or don't, if, you know, whatever the result is, would you call back here and let us know, Bruce?
Okay. What was the House of...
Go to callcongress.org. It points to a page on my website, but I've put on a bunch of toll-free numbers plus the main switchboard into Congress, and you'll get an operator, and you can just say, you know, give me Keith Ellison's office, and they connect you directly to it, or give me Congressman Grijalva, G-R-I-J-A-L-V-A, Grijalva's office, and they'll connect you to it. Or you're in Oregon, ask for Peter DeFazio's office. He's a member of the House Progressive Caucus, and he can, in fact, you can call Peter, one of Peter's local offices there in the state, and just ask, you know, who are members of the House Progressive Committee? Oh, Grijalva's Arizona. Thank you. I thought it was Southern California. I'm wrong.
Progressive Committee.
Say what?
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it's the Progressive Caucus, And it's 80 some odd, maybe 90 some odd members of the House of Representatives who are all Democrats, and they're all very progressive. Good luck on that. I wish you the very best. Let's see here. Oh, we've only got about 40 seconds here before the break, so I don't want to just drop somebody in on that. I would be very interested if you are of the opinion that we're watching the shock doctrine played out in Ukraine. This is a topic that I think there hasn't been anywhere near enough conversation about, the terms of the original IMF offer to Ukraine. And I keep asking the question, you know, what is America's interest here? Clearly it's business interests, I think. Anyhow, if you have more information or know more about this, give us a call. 10 minutes before. Hey, Thanks so much to our show director, Louise Hartman, to my executive producer, Sean Taylor, to our associate producers, Shane Farnan and Danielle Gilday, to our video director, Jim Javinsky, to writer-researchers Andrew Campbell and Nate Sweet, to Alva Goldbook for video production, to our webmasters, Nigel Peacock and Jamie Holly, our business manager, Ron Hartenbaum, everyone at the various companies that syndicate this program on commercial radio, Westwood One, on non-commercial radio, Pacifica, Sirius XM Satellite Radio, Cable Radio News Net, or Cable, excuse me, Cable Radio Network, CRN Network, Free Speech TV on Dish Network and DirecTV, all the cable providers that carry our show, Comcast, Manhattan Neighborhood Networks, to all the great folks at Free Speech TV and RTTV who work on The Big Picture, to the Progressive Voices channel on TuneIn, to our newsletter editor, Sue Nethercutt, to the folks in our chat room, to Ellen Ratner, Victoria Jones, Bob Ney, and everyone at the Talk Radio News Service, and to Jay Goodman Tamboli for tech support, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for supporting our program and supporting the stations or outlets or however you may be getting this program. Thank you. Thank you. And if you're listening to it on commercial or non-commercial radio and it's of value to you, be sure to let them know that you're listening. Charles in Bloomington, Indiana. Hey, Charles, what's up?
Yeah, hi. Mostly I agree with you and all your callers, but the one thing I kind of can see where Kyle's coming from is I've actually had some moments where I've risen above it, but where I clearly didn't even get considered for a job because I was white. And one was when I was interviewing some black schools. They were firing all their teachers and blaming them back in the 90s for poor performance instead of just addressing the problems. And so they were just replacing them with, I guess I was just going to be a scab, I guess. And so every single school that asked me, this was in Chicago, they interviewed me that day at the fair, said, well, how can you relate with our students? What experience do you have in our community? And I just was honest, I said, I have none, but, you know, I'm willing to learn. And I didn't get a call back, and I had about three other people I went with, and they were, you know, white too, and they said they didn't get hired either. Now, I don't know for a fact that was why I didn't get hired. Who knows, I may not have had straight hair that day, but it's like that was kind of a shocker that none of us got even considered even a callback.
But here's the white privilege part of that, Charles, is that you were shocked by that. That was probably the first time in your life that you'd had to sit down, scratch your head, and think about that. Imagine if that happens almost every day.
Yeah, I know. Another time was Greyhound. I tried to be a bus driver back in December, and they called me in, and they, of course, they didn't know what color I was, and I was the only white candidate, and they needed like 17 drivers, and about 13 of us showed up, and we all gabbed with each other, and we all were not really qualified, really, and we didn't have any experience. I didn't get a call back at all, and it's like I was no more or less qualified. It was just like, God, okay, I'll ignore that one. And then the third time would be when I was at Amtrak. I was hired, and people would come up to me and say, why were you hired? And, you know, because close to half of the 400 people in the res office are black. Now, this office is closed, but at the time they're black. And that people would, even blacks would come up to me and say, how did you get hired? And I thought to myself, do you have to be black to get hired here? And so I just would laugh. And my best man's black, so it was like, I just laughed, and he laughed, and he goes, I don't know how you got hired, Charles. So it's like, that was kind of humorous, but at the same time, I thought to myself, why should it be so hard for me to get hired?
Right. So, you know, welcome to discovering that your white privilege is starting to slip a little bit. This is my point, Charles, that if you were black, you would be able to tell me about a lifetime of these experiences. Did that person let that door close in my face because I was black? Did that person walk on the other side of the street because I was black? Did that person just lock their car door because I'm black? Did that bank teller, you know, not respond to me because I'm black? Is that guy following me around in Macy's because I'm black? Literally every day of your life. And you and I have never experienced these things because we're white. And when we do experience them, they pop out. We go, holy cow. And that's when you realize what white privilege is.
All right. Thanks a lot. You're great, as always.
Thank you, Charles. Thanks for the call. Jeff in Denver. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Well, I actually missed part of your show today because we're dealing with a massive energy spill out here. It's turning people's skin brown, and I had to turn off my thermostat and save money because there's a solar across the western U.S. melting all the snow and everything.
So
there's your solar energy everywhere.
You're getting too much sun in Colorado.
Yeah. Energy spill, I mean.
Could be worse.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
But anyway, which brings up the forgotten solar energy that everybody needs to look at, low cost, low solar thermal.
Yeah.
Like right now, you know, people say solar's too expensive. Well, if you look at the two countries that have the most solar hot water in the world, Cyprus and Israel, they're not really rich countries per capita.
Right.
But I'd ask you and your listeners to think, what would be like the maximum, these have the most solar hot water percentage-wise of any place in the world. And they've got about 90 to 95% of the houses have solar hot water.
Where?
Israel.
Oh, in Israel, yeah. I remember the first time I went to Israel, and that was back in the late 70s, how astounded I was by how many people had solar hot water heaters on their roofs. And, some of them were rather primitive or handmade or whatever, but, some of them were pretty sophisticated, but they were everywhere.
It's been mandated in Israel since 1980.
Uh-huh.
And Cyprus has been on a program for a long time of that. And actually, I think it was 1993 they surpassed 91% saturation.
Yeah, yeah.
But even South Africa, you'll see tin shacks made out of found materials with solar hot water.
Right.
So these countries can do that. If we can have countries that have over 90% solar hot water, why can't we do it?
Yeah, well, we can. But, there's been no mandate. There's been no incentive. During the Carter administration, you travel around the United States looking at houses for sale, and you will find pretty much anywhere you go that there is this little sub niche of houses that are energy independent. And they were always built in 1979 or 1980, during the 2 years that the Carter administration had all this underwriting and all these subsidies and all these tax breaks for people who were building enough energy efficient homes. Jeff, thank you very much for the call. And we need to get back to that. I mean, Ronald Reagan became president, with all that oil industry money, and he put an end to that. Anything that would compete with the oil industry, we can't have that. And boom, they're gone. So anyhow, thanks so much for being with us all this week. We will see you Monday. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It actually requires participation. PDAmerica.org, MoveToAmend.org, GoatsForTheOldGoat.com. There's all kinds of great stuff you can do out there. Tag, you're it. See you on Monday.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.